The title of this program is God and His Attributes, Number 1. Let us say a prayer. This is Psalm 15 in the Douay Rheims Bible. I will bless the Lord, who hath given me understanding. Moreover, my reins also have corrected me, even till night. I set the Lord always in my sight, for He is at my right hand, that I be not moved. Therefore my heart hath been glad, and my tongue hath rejoiced. Moreover, my flesh also shall rest in hope. Because Thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, nor wilt Thou give Thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou hast made known to me the ways of life. Thou shalt fill me with joy with Thy countenance. At Thy right hand are delights even to the end. Psalm 15, verses 7 to 11. Our recent discussions have dealt with God and the problem of evil. I began these by referring you to St. Paul's condemnation of atheism and the atheists of his day. As I observed in his first chapter of the letter to the Romans, he speaks of the Roman polytheists as if they were atheists because they did not acknowledge the true God. These are his words. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and injustice of those men that detain the truth of God in injustice. In this verse 18, he says that their atheism has roused God's anger, because that which is known of God is manifest in them, for God hath manifested it unto them. In this verse 19, St. Paul says that the existence of God is known to every man. If he is an atheist, therefore, it is because he violates his own reason. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, his eternal power also and divinity, so that they are inexcusable. In this verse 20, he gives the argument for God's existence, which we refer to as the argument from causality. The argument which St. Paul presents is utterly simple, and he does it in the following syllogism. His major premise is implied. It is the principle of causality, namely, the major, every effect must have a cause. The minor, the visible world is an effect, for clearly it did not make itself. The conclusion, an invisible being made the world, and that being is the one true God. A further syllogism may be drawn from the same text. The major, he who made the world must have eternal, that is, infinite power. The minor, God made the world. The conclusion, therefore God has eternal or infinite power. In Paul's mind, another conclusion follows from the preceding. The major, he who has infinite power should be worshipped as God. The minor, the creator of the world has infinite power. The conclusion, therefore, the creator of the world should be worshipped as God. We Catholics are taught that the denial of God's existence is a sin because His existence can be known through the use of reason. My effort here will be to present to you the logical proof for God's existence. Once we begin, we will find that the exposition quickly establishes the existence of an infinite being, and our main concern will be to deduce his attributes, that is, his divine qualities. It is through the deduction of the attributes of God that we gain a rational idea of what God is like. In this discussion, I am unashamedly plagiarizing from the book Ontology by Canon Fernon van Steenbergen. Canon van Steenbergen wrote two small books in the 1940s, which were translated from French into English. They used to be found in every Catholic philosophy house. The first is entitled Epistemology, the second Ontology. These two books represent the very best in neo-scholastic reasoning. It is unfortunate that they are not better known. I do not hesitate to say that any man who has a degree in philosophy, who has not mastered these two books, should discontinue thinking himself a philosopher. Of course, in secular universities, such books as these would go unappreciated, as currently the study of philosophy consists more in studying the thoughts of those who are credited with being philosophers than with seeking the causes of all things. The order of finite beings is totally relative. Its basic deficiency can be brought out by scrutinizing it on the level of existence, then on the level of activity. On the level of existence, the collection of finite beings cannot explain the ontological similarity which unites all these separate beings in the order of existence, or the static order, just as no one of the finite objects themselves can explain that similarity to others. Since, indeed, all of them are finite, that is, opposed to each other, strangers to each other, separate from each other, no one of them can contain the other as its total cause, and consequently, the ontological similarity among them remains unexplained. On the level of activity, this radical indigence is also shown on the level of activity or in the dynamic order, for the real expansion of finite beings through activity could not be explained by the collection of them. Activity cannot, in fact, be reduced in any sense to mere receptivity. To act is not merely to receive a second act. It is to produce that act, to be the principle of that act. If the active being has to receive a certain complement to its power of activity from the beings surrounding it, this is only a preliminary condition for its own activity. It is a condition whose function is to relate the active subject to its environment and direct its activity in a certain sense. But the secondary act itself is an increase of being. The true principle of that act is the finite being insofar as it is. The act is a new perfection, having its immediate source in the active substance itself, which is set off from all other finite substances by its constitution as a finite being. This being the case, it is evident that we cannot take the activities of the finite being to be mere exchanges among finite beings, exchanges which would not affect the global perfection of the entire order of finite beings at all. On the contrary, since each of the active substances comprising that order is a source of new perfections, the whole order of finite beings is perfected, enriched, and developed. The whole order receives an increase of perfection thanks to the activity of the finite beings. In a word, the order of finite beings is perfectible. Now, an absolute being cannot be perfectible, because every change implies dependence on an extrinsic cause. Consequently, the order of finite beings is not an absolute reality. The order of finite beings is completely conditioned by the infinite being. A final metaphysical inference will enable us to discover the supreme ontological implication of reality, and at the same time to reach the highest point of human thought, which is the culminating point of metaphysics. The radical opposition which we see between the finite and the absolute logically compels us to the affirmation of a being which transcends the order of finite beings, being which are composed, perfectible, and relative. We are driven logically to the affirmation of a being which is not finite, but infinite. The metaphysical inference which reveals the existence of the infinite being to us is very simple. An absolute reality forces itself upon us. We cannot find this absolute reality in the order of finite beings. Consequently, it must transcend the order of finite beings and is therefore non-finite or infinite. In this way, we pass from proper but confused knowledge of the unconditioned being to the improper or analogical but distinct knowledge of the infinite being by means of the proper and distinct knowledge which we have of the essentially relative finite being. We are forced to infer that all reality cannot be finite. We state our case in the following syllogism. The major, that which exists, is either finite or non-finite. The minor, an absolute reality does exist. The conclusion, therefore, the absolute reality must be either finite or non-finite. A further minor, but this reality is not finite, because everything finite is relative. The conclusion, therefore, this reality must be non-finite or infinite. To this syllogism, we must add another. The purpose of this second one is to show that finite reality is dependent upon an infinite being. The major, that which exists, is either absolute or it is relative to the absolute. The minor, the order of finite things does exist. The conclusion, therefore, it is either absolute or it is relative to the absolute. The minor, but the order of finite beings is not absolute. The conclusion, therefore, it is relative to the absolute, that is, by reason of the preceding conclusion, to the infinite. Our demonstration can be summarized in the following way. The major, reality exists. The minor, finite reality could not exist were there not a larger reality of which finite reality is only a part. The conclusion, total reality, therefore, must include an infinite being. What we must do next is analyze the nature of this infinite being to determine what kind of being it is. What do we mean by describing this being as infinite? It is free of all ontological finiteness. It is a being which is not opposed to any other, is not limited by any other, is not foreign to any other, even to finite beings, for it pre-contains them adequately as their total cause. The infinite being does not enter into relation with finite beings. It is not influenced by them in any way. It cannot receive any increase of perfection from them. To say that it is infinite means that it is the complete opposite of finite beings. whatever a finite being is, the infinite being is not. And whatever the infinite being is, finite beings are not. The only characteristic which the infinite being shares with finite beings is that they are both beings. However, the word being can be used of both only analogously, because the infinite being is being itself and the cause of his own existence. Finite beings derive their existence from the infinite one. They may be said to participate in the being of the infinite. Thus we recognize that the infinite being is the source and cause of all other beings. We say that finite beings are caused by another. They are conditional, unnecessary, contingent, dependent, and relative. Therefore, the infinite being is uncaused, unconditioned, necessary, and independent, in a word, absolute. To say this being is absolute is to say that it exists by itself and for itself. It cannot not exist. It exists by its own will. Having established that this being is infinite and absolute, other attributes can be derived logically. Among the attributes which flow from the infinite nature of this being is immutability, or changelessness. The reason infinite being is changeless is that since it is being itself, it cannot be less or more than it is. It cannot increase or decrease. It cannot become better or more perfect. There is no way that it can change, and nothing exists which can change it, or even have access to it. Similarly, the infinite being is simple. All finite beings are composed. Their creation consisted of their being made. The essential composition of created things is that their essences are given existence. In the creation of man, his soul must be brought into existence and united to his body, which is the product of his parents' bodies. The infinite being is being itself. It cannot be composed. It cannot be given existence, because it is its nature to exist. Another attribute of the infinite being is its uniqueness, its singularity. There cannot be two infinite beings. The infinite being is being itself. To speak of two infinite beings is a contradiction in terms, thus the absurdity of polytheism. Either the beings worshipped as gods by the polytheists are creatures of a supreme being and are therefore not gods at all, or they do not exist at all. There can only be one infinite being, and all other beings must derive their being from it. They exist by being sustained by this being. Another attribute of the infinite being is its spirituality. The infinite being must be spiritual because corporeality is a limitation and an imperfection, which is to say, a corporeal thing is an extended reality, which is located with respect to other bodies. It is an extended being, one which is subject to spatial extension. A non-corporeal being, or one which is free from spatial conditions, is spiritual. The infinite being is not a body, but a spirit. He is incorporeal and non-extended. Composition implies finiteness. But an extended or corporeal being is composed of quantitative parts. Therefore, an extended being is a finite being. The infinite being is eternal. A finite being begins to exist, is subject to change, is changed by itself or other beings. It may or may not cease to be, a thing beyond its control. Because it did not cause itself to begin to be, it cannot prevent change within itself, and cannot determine its uninterrupted existence. The infinite being is completely free from temporal conditions because of its immutability. Its duration excludes all beginning of existence, all succession, and all cessation of existence. Its unchangeable duration, free from all the limitations characterizing time, is called eternity. The duration of the infinite is an unchangeable present, an unchangeable permanence, an immobile now.